And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson, and we've got another winner on the Florida Swing. The second event, Arnold Palmer Invitational, and the metronome. The Italian detective. Shout out to Michael Bamberger, who gave me that one. This has been an incredible, I guess, calendar year, if we take it all the way back, for Francesco Molinari. So, Kyle, we'll get into the winner here in a little bit, but what were some of your thoughts here as we look at Bay Hill? We had no Tiger. We've got some disappointments from a Rory McIlroy. We've got a very Euro-friendly leaderboard by the time the things are done. Like, was I a little bit too... I couldn't help but get a little bit of Ryder Cup flair or rivalry. I mean, I feel like we're too far away from the next Ryder Cup for me to start feeling that way. But I was like, man, America's getting its tail whooped in Florida and Paris.
Two things. One, I don't know if anybody had Keith Mitchell and Adam Long as the low Americans.
Seriously.
At Bay Hill. That's not great.
Is Keith Mitchell leading? Like, is he having the best Florida swing so far of anybody?
Probably, yeah. I mean, yeah, because Fowler and Koepka didn't. I think Koepka missed the cut. Fowler finished like T40 or T41, something like that. So yeah, Keith Mitchell's having a pretty good month. He got into the Open. Bay Hill's a Open qualifier now, so he got in. Sung Jae Im got in, and Sung Kang got in to the Open Championship. So, pretty cool couple of week stretch for Keith Mitchell. But I mean. And this is what I was thinking about on Sunday. Actually, I was thinking about this on Saturday. It was the conditions on Saturday. It was tough. Mm. I mean, the greens were hard. The proximity to the hole average was, I think, the highest of any day was on Saturday. It actually rose after the cut was made, which is not something you see super often. Thursday, Friday, I think it was like the average distance from the hole on approach shots was like 38, 39 feet. It rose to 41 feet on Saturday, and you could tell, like, guys could not stop balls on the greens at Bay Hill, and it was kind of awesome. Like, it was kind of baked out, difficult. Greens were fast. Guys were having to hit shots. It felt, obviously not major-like, but if you juxtapose it against the Players this week, which everybody keeps talking about is going to be super soft, I think it felt more like a – kind of championship style golf than maybe even the Players will. And I think you saw the effects of that, right? Did you see at the top of the leaderboard? All these Europeans, these guys that we see over and over again play well in those types of conditions. It was very un-PGA Tour-like conditions. And that's why you see the Rorys, the Fleetwoods, the Molinaris at the top of that leaderboard.
The guys that it's not the point and shoot dart golf. That always gets attributed to American style. Well, what about this? Okay, so we know that the Bear Trap scoring is one of the most difficult non-majors annually on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. And we saw some difficult conditions here this week. I'm not the, I don't know what the agriculture studies, agroecology or something. I don't know all the grass stuff, but I know that that's a big part of the deep golf analysis. And like, is it possible that what we've seen from the last 2 weeks, like is that just what the conditions are like in Florida right now, or it because of watering and because of whatever the PGA Tour wants to do with the Players in terms of making sure that there's a lot of birdies, like. Are you expecting that Sawgrass will be soft as advertised, or is it possible that we're just seeing, based on weather and climate and everything else, just a little bit of a tougher Florida swing than we're used to?
No, I think so much of it is control. I think you can so easily control what your course does. And I was glad they did that at Bay Hill. You know, that's a place that I think it's got a pretty wide variety in terms of how easy or difficult it can play. And I love seeing it play tougher because I think it creates a, I don't know. I don't know if truer is the right word, but a truer champion, we'll say. And I think a more interesting leaderboard and not only that, but just like kind of the way the tournament plays out.
Okay. So the way the tournament played out, this thing was looking like, Rory was going to absolutely run away with it. And to have him not only not be in the mix, because look, Francesco Molinari shoots a 64 on Sunday. This goes back to the conversation that we have so many times. Like, sometimes you've played well enough to win, but someone was just a couple strokes better or blacked out, fires 64, 63, 65. Losing a tournament to Francesco Molinari in that way does not make for something that I think you should hang your head at. But yet, as we continue to break Rory down and look at what his 2019 is going to hold, to have him, you know, and there was the going up against Dustin Johnson, and it felt like Rory wasn't really able to hit the gas pedal. How alarmed are you in terms of the continuation of this narrative for McIlroy?
Well, here's my thing, Chip, and I was saying about this on Sunday. It's like, okay, you look at Rory, and he's number one on the PGA Tour in strokes gained. He's the best. I mean, you could argue he's been the best player in the world in 2019, but it seems like we say this every Monday based on Sunday or Sunday night, whenever we've taped these podcasts. We say, oh, well, he just got beat by a career day by fill in the blank. Xander in Hawaii, Dustin in Mexico, JB at Riviera, Molinari at Bay Hill. And it's like, at what point do you start saying, wait a second, why isn't Rory that guy?
Mm.
Like, why isn't he the one having that performance? And I don't know.
Have an answer for that? You're just going to throw the question out?
Yeah. Well, on Sunday, it's been different, right? Yeah. Like, It was a legitimate all-time performance from DJ in Mexico. Like, it was impossible, and he didn't play well on the front nine. I feel like people keep saying, "Oh, well, this is, you know, it's no big deal. Like, Rory's still playing well," and it's like, well, I've watched these Sundays, and while people are right that it's not a big deal, there's also been opportunities for him to get up and go, and he's not going. You know, he had an opening on the front nine in Mexico. Mm-hmm. DJ went out in 35, even par. Rory went out in 36. That's nothing.
Yeah, if you're trying to win a golf tournament, you got to shoot 32 or 33
He did nothing on the front nine at Bay Hill for the first 14, 15 holes, really. I mean, there was just nothing there. And I don't know. Maybe he's the guy now who, like, he's going to put himself in that position over and over and over again, and one out of every 10 is going to hit instead of one out of every 3 or two out of every 5 or whatever the number used to be. I just think we're so used to when he's in that position, he wins. And, you know, he's only done it, what, once in the last 16 months or so at Bay Hill last year when he shot the 64 in the final round. That was the Rory that we know, that we've seen over the course of his career. So, yeah, I don't know. He didn't hit any putts on Sunday. I mean, that was the big deal. He hit a 25-footer, I think, on 3, 27-footer, something like that.
27-footer for birdie.
And he gave it this cocky, like, subtle fist pump, like, I'm going to destroy everybody today. And then he did nothing for the next 15 holes. You know, and I don't think he made a putt over 6 feet the rest of the way. I think that was the number. And he's hitting good shots. He's driving it great. He's hitting pretty decent, you know, not great, but decent approach shots. And I think he lost like 2.5 strokes to the field on the greens on Sunday. So if you're not leading by 3 or 4, you're not going to win a tournament like that. It's just not going to happen.
He was pretty confident, and he said, I'm happy with everything. I think today I could have played the par fives better, but really apart from that, it was an unbelievable round for Francesco. I'm playing well. I'm getting myself into contention every week. I need to continue to do that going into next week. That's the great thing about golf. You don't have to wait too long to get back on the horse. So Rory McIlroy appears to have a mentality similar to, you know, what you suggested, that he seems to... In his own analysis of his game, the thought is, if I'm in contention 10 times, one of these is going to hit. And to be in that spot and yet not to get the wins, like, Has Rory, with all of his mindfulness, evolved to golf 2.0, where winning truly isn't everything?
You know what it kind of feels like, though?
What?
It feels a little like Fowler.
Mm.
Right? You know, Fowler's always like top five, top 10, you know, whatever. But you're rarely when he's playing or in contention, are you like, Ricky Fowler's definitely winning this golf tournament.
Yeah.
You know, and I've sort of felt like that a little bit with Rory this year. And again, like, this is analysis. That's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that as if like it's the worst thing that you can be as a golfer or worst thing that you can do as a golfer. That's just sort of how I viewed it this year. And you know, maybe all of this is leading to a Players win or to a Masters win or something like that. Maybe that's the one that hits. And that goes back to like the arbitrary nature of golf, of just like, why did the Masters hit, or why did the Players hit and not Mexico and not Riviera? It's I don't know. On some level, it's so like ethereal that you're just like, does any of this matter? Like, you start asking these philosophical questions. But I do think it matters. And I think this matters with Ricky. I think it matters with Rory too. Like, if you're putting yourself in that position over and over and over again, it's almost impossible to not win at some point.
Right.
Statistically speaking. And, you know, so maybe we see that over the next few weeks, but maybe not. I don't know. I think trying to decipher that and figure it out and dive into it and look at all the stats, I think that part of it that's what is so interesting to me about the sport.
Fowler, you mentioned, no bueno this week, finishes T40. It's, yeah. Your boy, you mentioned last week, Oak State Amateur getting the invite here.
Yeah, he tied Fowler, Victor Hovland. They were both.
Hove!
Him, Hunter Mahan, and Ricky Fowler, three Oklahoma State guys at very different parts of their careers, all finished T40 at Bay Hill. Eamon Lynch of Golf Week wrote a really good piece about Hovland, just talking about, you know, he looks like a pro. Like he is a pro for all intent. I mean, obviously he's not getting paid, but he is at some point going to turn pro and hopefully have some success on the PGA Tour. So, and he's not even the best player on his team right now.
Because that's Matthew Wolf.
Matthew Wolf, yeah.
Darn so. Right. Anything from Fowler that you, like, Sunday was the, like, Ricky Fowler's tendency to just throw a big number up on the board is not dissimilar from many players on the PGA Tour, especially when you're playing at a tough course in tougher conditions. But when Fowler's got the talent, the statistical profile of someone who should be contending and winning, and obviously the reputation for it, I guess I'll ask the same thing with Rory. Is that an alarming continuation of a trend?
Well, I think for me with Fowler, it is, I was kind of following him on Sunday. He was 4 under through like 14, playing pretty well on a tough day. I think the scoring average was right at even par, 72. And then all of a sudden he goes double and then bogey, and he's back at even par, 1 under or whatever. It feels like the 3 over in 2 holes or 4 over in 5 holes is always lurking with him.
Yep.
Which is terrifying when you're playing a major, you're playing the Players or something like that. Because, I mean, Mexico, he played 3 events in a row. Oh, it was Phoenix, Mexico, and Honda. The last 3 events that he played before this one, he had a triple in all of those. And somehow he won Phoenix with the triple. But it just always feels like the other shoe's about to drop with him, you know?
Like, in a good way or in a bad, like you're just sort of cruise. And if he has a good round going on the 12th hole, that's what you mean. Like there's,
yeah. I'm like, oh, well, is this going out of bounds? Like when I watch him, I don't totally trust that he's going to have a clean card.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, if you're blowing up and going, you know, 4 over in 2 holes, then you just, I don't know. It's just so easy to play yourself out of some of these tournaments.
We'll get into the winner, finally, of the event, Francesco Molinari, right after this.
I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com. Okay. It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
Man, it's like the Open Championship all over again. Open up the show talking about Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Hit the break.
And Rory and Justin Rose. And
yes. So let me pull this up.
Bamberger. Italian Detective is so good, by the way.
Yeah, Bamberger put this together. He said, since May, he's won in England, Washington, D.C., Scotland, and now Orlando plus Paris.
Yeah. Yeah. Frankie's awesome. And here's the thing. I was talking about this on HQ this morning. You don't see guys at the age of 36 make the leap that he's making. This is a age 26 year old leap, or an age even like 30 or 31. It's not a 36 year old leap. And so it's weird. Sean Martin did a really good piece last fall about how Frankie's picked up like 20 yards off the tee, which has really seemingly transformed him as a player. I mean, he's just so before he was always like, oh, he's kind of like Fleetwood is right now. You're like, oh, he's a good player, but I don't, you know, he's not really, he don't really win. He's just kind of there. Like, he's solid.
Fun. It's fun. Yeah. It's like great to watch him play. It's fun when he gets hot, but the winning of the last calendar year is stupid. It's different.
Yeah. Well, and he's like I can't remember how I said this on how I wrote this on Sunday, but he's always like, you forget about him because he's like, he doesn't talk very much, and he's like a silent assassin on the leaderboard. You're just like, holy crap. Like, what did I just watch? And it felt like it did feel like he was on 18 hitting his approach to 18. And I was thinking, it feels like I'm watching the champion of this event.
Mm.
And then he hits the putt on 18. You're like, well, that's
a wrap.
I can go write my grades. You know, I can go do my post. And I don't know. I think that trait of being kind of the silent assassin type, where nobody's really like picking you, and nobody's, you know, you're not a big name. Like, you're just not, despite what you've done. I think that's like the sweet spot. That's where you want to be. There's not a ton of expectations. You should go out and just kill. I mean, it was pretty awesome on Sunday.
For someone who reportedly once told another golfer that his plan was to retire soon, go to Italian coffee shops and be an internet troll for the for the rest of his life. He sure does let his game do the talking over anything else.
I forgot about that quote. That's so good. And he finished top, I think, fourth in putting, which is stupid. I mean, if he's fourth in putting, then you can just start engraving the trophy. That it's over with the way he hits it.
Okay, so he's 36 years old. Francesco Molinari. What's his career wins?
Well, he's got three on the PGA Tour. So he's got Quicken Loans, he's got the Open, and then he's got Bay Hill. He's got a bunch on European Tour. He won BMW PGA Championship last year. I don't know. 7, 8, 9 on the European Tour, maybe more than that. I don't know. I don't know the number there.
Okay, so he's world number 7 right now.
Yeah.
At the end of the 2019 calendar year, do you think that Francesco Molinari will be a top 5 player?
Yeah. I'll say yes.
Because that would require not only a continuation of the success, but also the idea that everyone else who's trying to be up there and compete for the top 5, that he is also finishing better than them in these events.
Yeah, I know. That's the hard part. He's got 6 European Tour wins if you include the Open. So that's kind of unfair to include it going both ways. He's won the Italian Open twice, the Spanish Open, HSBC. I forgot about that. And then BMW PGA Championship.
Like, basically, do you think the jump is sustainable? And if not, or if so, you know, what's the half life? What's the end date on this? What is a real expectation for how much damage the Silent Assassin can do to the world golf rankings, to the major championships that are coming up? Like, are we seeing a spark, or are we seeing a flame that's going to be lit for a while?
No, I think it's a couple year thing, and I think where you're going to see this play out, or where it will play out if it plays out, is at the majors. I was doing, I don't know if you know this, Chip, but I was doing some Masters research the other day, every day, and Molinari, I was trying to figure out like where to slot him for my ranking the field. Yeah. And he doesn't have a top 10 at Augusta, but two of his career top fives, or excuse me, top 10s at majors. He's got 5 top 10s at majors. I don't know if I said that right. He's got 5 top 10s at major championships. Two of those have come in his last two events. So he won the Open, and then he finished T6 at the PGA. And he's played in a lot of majors. And so I do think that's significant. And I'm so interested to see how, like, is he somebody who can he grab another couple of top tens, maybe 3 top tens at majors in 2019? I don't know. I mean, these fields are just sick. They're right. So good. But I would be concerned in a major field on a week where Francesco's putting well.
I'll give you 3 names it feels like we haven't really dug into in a while. You tell me who is the most likely to win a major this year. Ready?
Can I give you his driving stats first?
For sure.
So driving distance, so Francesco Molinari is 117th on the PGA Tour in driving distance this year.
What's the distance?
290 something, 290.
The jumbling of driving distances, I've decided I'm easing off on going hard on that as declarative. If the distance between number 117 and like number 65 is 10 yards, is it? Probably?
I don't know. He's averaging 291 off the tee. Now, he hasn't played in very many events. Last year he averaged 301, so that was in 2018. 2017, he was 291. So he gained a legitimate – I'm throwing this year out because there haven't been enough events.
Right.
But he gained a legit eight yards on average from 17 to 18. That's a big deal.
That's a club.
That's significant. The problem for me with him at Augusta is that it, like, part of his shtick, part of his deal is being accurate, like hitting like right down the middle of the fairway. And it doesn't matter at Augusta. I mean, obviously, Phil has three green jackets.
Yes. No. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't. No, I mean, with those par fives, you just gotta, with par fives that you can hit your second shot from about anywhere and still probably have a chance to be able to put yourself in scoring position. No. It's actually perfect for the Phil Mickelson approach of like the Phil Mickelson who, as we mentioned, has just has gone the other way and just decided that he wants to crank up his swing speed and mash it as hard as possible. Forget about accuracy.
Yeah, totally. It's just hit it as far as you can and try to. Do you remember Phil on 15 a couple years ago when Spieth won? And what did he say when he hit that approach to on 15 on Sunday?
What did Phil? No, I mean, I don't remember this off the top of my head.
Oh, he said something like, crap, people are going to remember this and I can't. He said something like, oh my gosh.
Here, listeners, scream it into your phone or out loud at the gym. Just scream it.
He said that is so good or something like. Hold on, let me.
Did he say tasty? Was that when he said, "Oh, that's tasty"?
No. I'll pull it up. What were you gonna ask me about Francesco?
Bryson, Rahm, Tony Finau, three names, all in the top 15 that I feel like we have not because of their schedule or performance or some combination of the both. It feels like we haven't talked about them in a while. All top 15 players, and I guess all three are going to be in the field this week at the Players, right?
Bryson, Rahm, Tony Finau. Yeah, everybody will be there.
So of those three names that we haven't talked about in a while, who do you have the most positive outlook for?
I'm watching Phil on 15. I can't find it. I've got the most positive outlook about probably Rahm.
Rahm at number 10 in the world.
This is the whole like NBA draft, NFL draft thing where when a guy plays less, it's more curious or it's easier to project like positive things.
Oh, like I'm not going to throw, just look at the tape.
Yeah. And like Bryson's been playing recently. He's not been playing very well. Played terrible in Mexico, didn't play well in Bay Hill. And you're like, okay, well, I guess, you know. I don't know what Rahm finished in Mexico, but we haven't really seen him a ton. And I think Rahm could win. I think John Rahm could win the Masters.
John Rahm was cruising last year, right?
Well, he finished fourth.
Right. He was cruising until he got lost in the bushes.
Yeah. Well, it happens. But I think that John Rahm will win a Masters. How about this? I think John Rahm will win a Masters before Rory McIlroy.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I think he may never make another cut at a U.S. Open, but I think he'll win the Masters.
That's a good take.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm not ready to go that far, but I like it. I like it a lot. By the way, to answer my own question, I'm gonna go Finau.
Mm.
I would love to get a Tony. Maybe Tony Finau will be my Masters champ pick. Just go all in.
He's got a Puerto Rico Open and a Masters.
amazing.
Those are his two wins.
I mean, that's as amazing as Brooks Koepka, two wins, seven runner-ups in non-major PGA Tour events.
Yeah, that is crazy. I didn't realize that.
I will speak for myself, I spent a lot of time talking about how crazy it was that this guy had major wins and no PGA Tour wins, and now I follow up, and it goes back to whether the value of winning, the fact that Brooks Koepka, yes, he didn't have all these wins, but it wasn't like he was stinking it up and not trying to win.
Right.
Funny. Narratives.
I am like so deep on Google trying to find this Phil thing and I can't find it. And it's frustrating me.
I'm afraid that you're forget. I'm afraid that you've got like one either year or whole off, and that's
it. Probably wasn't even Phil. It was like it was like Thomas Bjorn or something.
It sounds like a Phil moment. It's just going to be in a different Masters or at a different hole.
Yes, definitely.
Oh man. All right, so we've got the players coming up this week. We'll be doing a more extensive preview on Wednesday. What's sort of the burning questions in your mind right now?
Well, I don't know. There's so many. I mean, I think my column on Monday, I haven't written it yet, but I think that I'm going to write about how, like, there's going to be so much consternation this week. Oh, is the Players a major? You know, what is it? Let's define it. And I think here's my take on this, Chip, and this is kind of half baked, but I'm getting closer to it. Like, I think the concept of majors is kind of dumb because we sort of like shoehorn these four tournaments into this one category, and yet the chasm between the Masters and let's say the second best one, we'll say the Open, is less. Like, what I'm trying to say is it, like, that chasm is less wide than the chasm between the third best one and the fourth best one, the US Open and the PGA Championship.
Right.
And so, like, the fact that we ascribe them all the same terminology is sort of dumb to begin with, right? Like, you'd rather win one Masters than three PGAs. So, like, are those really all in the same category? And so, like, whether we apply the major championship category to the Players or not, I think the whole thing is stupid, because I think the terminology of majors to begin with is dumb. Like, I do. Like, I think it's silly. Like, why are these four in the same category when one of them you'd rather win once than another one three times?
The Players Championship doesn't get the major distinction because it is not close enough to Augusta, which is the only other major that stays in the same place. And I think that, like, Augusta being the only major that doesn't rotate makes it sort of have this crown jewel iconic status, but we don't talk about the Players like we talk about Augusta. And because of that, I think that's the distance between those two is what probably is drawing the line, because PGA moves around, the Open. Now, granted, the Open has a very tight rotation, which, you know, gives it sort of its own iconic status because you build these memories and you come back to these courses. But I think that that's what it is. It has to do with the location, because it doesn't have the, you know, we're used to our Super Bowls moving around. We're used to our Final Fours moving around. You know, we're used to seeing the event itself sort of go on the road, and that's what's made the Players definitely the fifth major. I mean, what do we say? It qualifies as a major for the World Golf Hall of Fame, right?
Well, yeah, and I think what you're saying is a good point. And I guess my thing is, like, if you're ranking, like, if you're doing a 1 to 10 scale on, like, tournaments that you want to win, and the Masters is a 10, and let's say the PGA is like a 7, well, the Players is like a 6.8,
right,
or whatever. And you're like, well, why is the PGA in the same category as the Masters, but the Players isn't in the same category as the PGA, you know? Like, that's my whole deal. And I don't know. I think that we
in moving around at least the other American based majors, the PGA Championship and the US Open, in moving it around, they get to assert their own style for the tournament they want to host and take it to a lot of places, which not only is invigorating and refreshing for the Players, but also allows you to connect with fans all over the country and sort of spread it out. Has such a huge impact on whatever local community they decide that they're going to land on. And I mean, Sawgrass is kind of spoiled. They're kind of used to it. It's a little bit, like, everybody knows what to do. It's amazing. You've been there. Like, you had the blog cabin. Like, it's when it's there, it's amazing. It's spring break. It's the best thing ever. But I think that the fact that it is that it isn't mixed up and it doesn't get refreshed and it doesn't get moved around, I think that that's probably keeping it from sort of elevating its status among the conversation.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And I think we also do this thing where we look at titles, we look at names of tournaments instead of fields.
Right.
Like if you go in the mat, like let's say for whatever reason the top 50 guys in the world, this is an extreme example, but the top 50 guys in the world boycott the Masters this year. They don't go. And Charles Howell wins the Masters. You're like, okay, well, what does that mean? Like,
what is the significance of this now?
Well, we get so caught up in what is the name of the tournament you won instead of who are the guys that you beat? Is it harder to win a WGC or is it harder to win a PGA championship where 30 guys in the field are club pros? You know, like,
yeah.
I'm speaking in favor of the Players' Championship. Players' Championship is a better field than the PGA Championship. You don't have club pros. It's probably a better field than the U.S. Open because you don't have all these amateurs that get in or guys that play their way in. Now, I'm not saying those are bad things. I like those things about those tournaments. I just think that we get so hung up on the name, the Players' Championship, and don't look at the field. And I think you're right. Like, I think Sawgrass, like, and this is sort of what's frustrating me about this year. I don't want 20 under to win the Players' Championship. I want it to be hard. I want Ken Duke shooting 65 when everybody else is shooting 78.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. that's awesome. And that's part of big time championship golf, whether you're calling it a major or not. I just think the whole construct of what is a major and what is not is just sort of dumb when there's no, like, you're just roping in these four tournaments that are, we'll say, like sevens out of 10 or higher and excluding everything else. And it's like, it's dumb. Like, it's just an arbitrary way to look at it.
Well, on Wednesday, we'll get into the golf.
I'm ranting now. I'm back on the rule. We can talk about the rules some more.
We'll talk. Follow Kyle on Twitter at @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at @Chip_Patterson. We'll be back on Wednesday with our picks and predictions for the Players. The fifth major, it's here. Thank you very much, Kyle.
Thanks, Chip.